Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James.
The Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
What we talking about, girl?
I'm trying to call you.
And girl, I'm trying to call you.
Where you at?
Girl, I'm still over here in Europe. I'll tell you all about it.
Well, I have been, you know, tackling this motherhood, going back to work, dealing with some health stuff. But I wanted to talk to you about some black chefs that might be interesting to you and me.
Okay, girl. Well, I've got European updates for you, plus just so much stuff. Well, I've actually not been paying attention a lot to the news, but I've been taking a little bit of a peekaboo in what is going on in America.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Ring, ring, ring. Leave a message at the beep.
James, I'm just living my best life over here in Barcelona and Amsterdam. Gotta teach the kids across the pond. Can't pick up my new Google Fi phone, which is the shit. No, this is not a commercial. It's just an amazing and a must-have if you are traveling across the way outside of the U.S. It's such a good phone. Anyways, leave a message at the beep. Beep.
Hello, James. I'm calling you and you're not picking up because you're probably having way too much fun over in Europe, but that's all right. I know how it goes. You got to get your fun on, your dance-a-thon at all these parties while I'm here being a mom. Anyways, I guess I'll leave you this long message and I hope that you enjoy what I have to say. So, first of all, I want to talk to you about 16 Black Chefs Changing Food in America. This is an article that I found in the New York Times. It's written by John Elagon and Julia Moskin. Came out pretty recently in July 16th. And it's going on about Black chefs. And I really wanted to get into this because I watch a lot of MasterChef. I watch a lot of Chef's Table. I watch the new taco show that's on Netflix. I watch Chef with, what's his face, who directed Iron Man. I love a chef show because it helps me relax. I love watching Martha Stewart. It's one of the my primo relaxations. And one thing that I've noticed is that they don't feature a lot of black chefs. And I'm going to be very specific because a lot of people, when they say POCs, people of color, a lot of times we're not being specific on who we're talking about. And this time I'm going to be specific about black chefs. I'm sure I'm going to get other chances to talk about other minorities who are killing it in the game because that's what we do on Minority Corner. So let's just go down the list with some of these that I want you and whoever may be listening into this long voicemail that I'm leaving you some ideas of who's on this list. Now, I'm not going to go over all 16 because that is redonkulous. That would take forever. And plus, I only got so much time on this here voicemail. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Mashama Bailey, who's the executive chef and partner at The Gray in Savannah, Georgia, and the winner of this year's James Beard Award for Best Chef Southeast. Now, if you don't know, the James Beard Award is like the Oscars for chefs. They always talk about it on MasterChef. They always talk about it on Chef's Table, on all of the, on Chopped. So basically, if you hear James Beard or Michelin star, then you know that you're dealing with some boss baller chefs out there in the world. Now, Mashama has been, who has said, "It is up to us to be transparent with our information and our techniques and pass along to the next generation." So setting it up for other best chefs out there in the world. We got to kind of strike while the iron's hot right now, which is true. This is like a space for up and coming chefs, and the door is open. So let's just take advantage of it. So let's just get into who some of these chefs are. So Nyesha Arrington is 36 from Los Angeles. She is shaped by her multiracial family. She has a Korean grandmother and a father of Black and Cherokee descent. She grew up in Los Angeles, and she likes to blend California, Mexican, Chinese, Persian, and other cuisines, which is tasty. All of these things I love. Here's a quote from her. "I came up in fine dining because 17-year-old me wanted to know the tradition in and out and up and down. I went down the path of France and Nouvelle cuisine, which I love, but every single kitchen I ever worked in coming up, I never saw a Black woman." Ooh, snaps. "I had to see myself as a European male, and I assimilated a lot of those values into my cooking and my life. But now I value connection and finding the common denominator in food because it is something that can transcend race and ethnicity and gender." Snaps to her. Once again, her name is Nyesha Arrington. She's in Los Angeles. So check her out wherever you can. Doesn't say where she is cooking. She's not at a place right now, but if you hear her name, check out her food. Next up, we have Mashama Bailey, who I mentioned before with a quote earlier at the top of this corner. She is 45, the gray and the gray market in Savannah, Georgia, like I said before. She moves between New York City and Georgia. She appreciates French cooking, but she also appreciates the aesthetics of food as a sous chef in Prune. Ooh, Prune in Manhattan. Prune is a restaurant that is owned by a woman chef. I'm blanking on her name right now, but I watched her on this PBS chef's show. So she came up under a strong female influence, which I love. A quote from her. "I used to think that the skills my mother and grandmother had were small and insignificant because the world taught me that Black food was small and insignificant. But now I realize what we contribute to food in America is vast. Right now, that's all I want to cook, and I want to cook it on a level that resonates with me beyond whether it tastes good." See, you know, that's pretty strong. So she is out here to make a mark. She likes to make good food, but also making a mark on what we value in our culture. A lot of times with these chef shows, French cooking is like the upper echelon, and it's all these white male chefs, which is so interesting to me because when you think about cooking, they always say like, oh, woman's place is in the kitchen. But when you reach superstar status, all we do is see men, and it's like such a masculine kind of role, which is crazy to me. So why can't we transcend that stereotype to include women in the higher levels and then men in the home-based levels? Cooking is cooking. Anybody can cook. Let's just embrace it as a type of enjoyment necessity that we all do. So let's see who else we got on this list. We have Preston Clark. He is 38, and his restaurant is Lur Fish Bar, which is in New York. He is shaped by his father, who is the first Black chef to win the James Beard Award. Ooh, snaps again. He also has worked from fancy places like Aquavit to Sammy Hagar's Steakhouse. So he's, you know, all over the place. Here's a quote from him. "I still believe in learning the classical techniques and the proper way to cook. I was raised to eat everything and learn to cook everything I could. Thai, Greek, steak. My parents taught me to take what you learn and make it your own. That's what being a chef is. It's important to me to feel I'm being true to the craft and not just true to my roots." So he's a little bit more chef focused, but you know what? You do you, Preston Clark. Once again, if you're in New York, check out Lur Fish Bar. Another one that I want to focus on is Kia Damon. She's young. She's 25. She works in New York. She grew up vegetarian in Orlando, Florida. And she has worked her way up through fast food chains. This is amazing. She has worked also through racism, misogyny, and homophobia in restaurant kitchens. That's another thing I want to touch on. A lot of these kitchen environments are very misogynist. which is once again really interesting to me considering the stereotype of cooking, home cooking is supposed to be such a womanly thing. When you go into restaurant world, it becomes very male dominated. But Kia Damon, here's a quote from her. I wanted to go to culinary school, but I knew I was never going to have that magic fairy tale. I accepted the fact that it was going to suck, and I put my head down and did what I had to do. As the only black woman in every kitchen, always being overlooked, being doubted, being disappointed, it pushed me to stay true to myself. I'm no longer looking for anything from anyone. You know, now as I'm reading this and really kind of thinking about it, I'm thinking that maybe the hyper-masculinity of these restaurant kitchens has to do with combating the stereotype of home kitchens being such a woman-run 1950s type of, thought process, like stereotype. I keep saying stereotype, but that's kind of what it is. So maybe it's the swinging in the other direction to combat that notion, which just once again lays a finger on toxic masculinity, where it is making these kitchens hyper masculine just in order for the men who work in there to feel like they have a manhood and not doing a womanly thing, which is nothing to be disgraced about. If you're cooking in a kitchen, that's just it. It has no gender. All right, let's go to Jerome Grant. He's 37, and he works at Sweet Home Cafe in the National Museum of African American History and Culture, which is in Washington, D.C., which I want to go to so bad. It's supposed to be amazing. He is shaped by his father's lifelong military career. He's a home economics teacher who encouraged him. Oh, his dad was a home economics teacher who encouraged him to take cooking seriously. Interesting. Developing a menu to represent all of African American food, culture, and feeding is 2,000 people daily. So cool. This is a quote from Jerome Grant. My father raised me with the idea that you always have to do better than the person next to you. As a black man, you have to perform 3 times better than the person. I saw that in kitchens right away. We were the cooks, but we were never the chefs, never the operators. My parents tried to sell me on the military instead of hospitality, but I was never going to be that guy. So my mom said, I want you to learn the trade as a career, not a job. Interesting. Yeah, that's another kind of interesting take with the overlay of being black and in a service position, because that is something that were the only jobs that black people could get for a very long time in this country. So to be able to turn that on a head and have that job, wear it with pride instead of, oh, this is something that we were only allowed to do, but instead, no, this is what I want to do. This is a vocation that I feel strongly about. And then also to flip it even further and be like, I'm going to run this kitchen. I'm going to run this huge food for the National Museum of African American History and Culture. That, or even just, you know, a mom and pop restaurant around the corner. You are feeding people. You are giving people sustenance. I know in a lot of languages, hello translates to have you eaten. Food is center of being human. So we need to stop looking down on these professions. We need to cherish them and really look at the people who are not just white men. Like, let's celebrate women in the position. Let's celebrate people of color in the position. Let's celebrate black people in America who are in these positions, because that's who's been doing it for so long, who shaped Southern food cuisine. Let's jump into another one. Let's look at McKinney Howell. She is a chef at Plum Bistro and Sugar Plum in Seattle. She was raised in a vegan family and has been in the food industry since 1970s, a year on tour with Stevie Wonder as his personal chef, and slowly building a 6-part vegan food empire. How cool is that? My biggest problem with the prejudice is the prejudice against plant-based food. Not as a woman, not as a black woman, but getting you to eat your plants, getting you to pay for them, finding staff who want to cook that way. That's a struggle I could take on, even though there's no roadmap for success for that. Now, I love McKinney Howell's vegan empire, basically, because especially in black community, a lot of our food is based around meat. And a lot of times, I mean, it goes all the way back to slave times where black people basically had to make the best out of scraps And then that became Southern cuisine, and then that became soul food, and that became food that is cherished today. But once again, I want to say that it started off with scraps, so a lot of it is very much fatty meat, and that's fine. That's good in small doses. But at the same time, we need to embrace more plant-based diet in order to survive, to live healthy, to get over heart disease, to get over high blood pressure that's plaguing our country, our people. So McKinney Howell's doing that by creating restaurants that are lifting up vegan food, getting celebrities like Stevie Wonder to embrace these diets, which are healthier. I myself eat vegetarian in the house, and it's not hard. I mean, it's not the easiest, but it's not hard. And I highly suggest that we all challenge ourselves to eat a little bit healthier so we can, you know, pass down good habits to our next in line and then also stay healthy ourselves. Let's do one more, and let's end with Eduardo Jordan. He's 39, and he's the chef at Solaire, June Baby, and Lucinda Grain Bar in Seattle. He trained at the highest levels of dining in the United States, France, and Italy, a drive to prove he could cook and at the level with his first restaurant, Solaire, growing up in Florida on the home cooking that inspired June Baby. Here's a quote from him. Like most chefs, my goal with the first restaurant was to flex my muscles a little bit, make sure I had a footprint in the culinary terrain. I only knew one story, the French story. When another space came available as an entrepreneur, I knew I had to take it, but I knew I needed to do a restaurant that was easy for me, something I could cook with one eye closed, one arm tied behind my back, one leg cut off. That's tough. Anyways, and that was my grandmother's food. So once again, just going over all, making sure to, I just really want to kind of emphasize that to be Black in an industry, you have to do so much better. And all of these people say that in their quotes, that it's like, I had to make sure this is what I wanted to do. I have to represent myself in a certain way, and I had to perform a certain way. I just want to point that out because that's just kind of the experience here. It's not like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be accepted. People are going to like me. I'm going to walk in. This is a space made for me. A lot of times that's not true. I would say 95% of the time that is not true. So I am glad that I was able to share this list for you. Once again, if you want to read more about these chefs, it is the New York Times article, 16 Black Chefs Changing United States Cuisine. I also wanted to point out, you guys know who, if you're a longtime listener or just a recent listener of the podcast, I'm very much into the maternal mortality crisis that's going on right now, where Black women have a 3/4 chance, higher chance of dying during pregnancy and after pregnancy than white women. John Oliver just did a segment with a little bit touching on that about biases in doctors. And I'm so glad that it's just like spreading like wildfire. I think we might be onto something to truly change the culture because so many people, so many mainstream outlets are getting a hold of this, are looking into it, are creating apps to combat it, to training doctors and healthcare professionals to fix their bias, not fix them, but at least be aware of them. So when they are prescribing and working with patients, they can hopefully combat them. I'm super excited that it was really awesome to see this happening on HBO. Anyways, I hope you guys, James included, have enjoyed it, this little voicemail that I've left. And James, I really hope that you are having a fun time in Europe. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to WKEP at Night. Up next, looks like we've got a PSA from local forest ranger Duck Newton.
Do I start now or?
Yeah, lean in, Duck.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I wanted to address the unfortunate situation that, okay, listen, two people, good people that I and a lot of y'all have known our whole lives are dead. Torn to shreds
by a savage, bloodthirsty beast that defies human comprehension. If you'd like to know more, stop by the Cryptonomica, Kepler's premier museum of the macabre, just off Highway
20. Come on. We just wanted to warn y'all, to beg you. If you see one of those things out in the forest, don't fight. Don't scream. Run. Run as far as you can.
Doc, it's almost midnight. Listen, folks, if you see anything, please go to thelamplighter.org and let us know. And get behind a locked door tonight.
Anything else we need to... Oh, they're leaving. Okay, well, that's thelamplighter.org, and stay safe out there, Kepler.
Reach the Neke cell phone. I am busy conquering the world as a librarian, as a mom, as a wife, as a woman, as a black woman, as every other label you can put on it. Leave a message after the beep, and maybe in my power schedule, I will fit you in.
Aneke, oh my god, I saw that you called. I did not listen to your voicemail because who listens to voicemails today, right? You could text me. Well, I feel like you have a lot to say because it's been so long. You better not be screening my calls. I have so much to tell you. I hope everything's going well. Love seeing the photos of you and baby Maya and your husband. You are such an adorable family. I feel like you are getting ready to gear up back to school and the workforce. You are Wonder Woman, and I know you're going to be able to handle it all. It's been crazy. So I've been over here and having a workcation over here in Europe. I've gone to my two favorites, my mainstays, Barcelona and Amsterdam. Started off in Amsterdam. And, you know, I thought I was just going on this trip. I didn't know why I was going on this trip and going on for so long. But it's been a very eye-opening experience. I went to Milkshake Festival. I went to Amsterdam for 2 weeks. I was at Milkshake Festival and Pride. So they do in Amsterdam their Pride for like 2 weeks. It's two weekends. The Milkshake Festival, it's just kind of a dance musical festival. Who's performing? And people are just like, doesn't matter. We're just going to dance and party. And it's just a really, there's a Ferris wheel. Sporty Spice, she was there. It was funny because at first, like, someone, she was performing, and it was a 2-day music festival, and she was performing, and someone was like, hey, do you know, like, I heard someone singing, and they were like, yeah, Sporty Spice, and like, they're like, no, she's up there performing, and, you know, she's only 1/5 of the Spice Girls, and, you know, people want to hear the Spice Girls, and she knew what they wanted to do, what they wanted to hear, so she started playing covers first, which is great, reel them in with covers, and then she's like, people are like, do the Spice Girls stuff, and she knew her audience, and she started doing the Spice Girls, and she had 4 drag queen backup dancers with her, and then she did like her solo stuff. So good job, Mel C. You knew what to do. And then the following weekend, I also went to Den Haag, which is the capital of the Netherlands. Spent some time there by the beach. It's really nice. Love it. And then their Pride, Amsterdam Pride, is the best. If you have a chance, gotta go, y'all. You gotta go to Amsterdam Pride. It is the best. They have literal floats because the Pride Festival, the parade, goes through the canal, and it's literal floats. It was amazing. One of my best friends, Rob, was in town from San Francisco, and he knew someone who lived alongside the canal route, and we were right alongside, he had a balcony, and so we had like the best view. It was amazing. Pose float, or like a ballroom float, so they were doing like the boat is like moving, and they're also like walking the runway. It was amazing. Also at the Milkshake Festival, there was this one faux queen. She was doing all the sort of like ball stuff. Like, so they were doing a lot of ball culture has made it over here. They're loving it. They're watching Pose. They're watching RuPaul's Drag Race. They love it. At the Milkshake Festival, it was hilarious because people were trying to jump in on the category.
And she was like, if you do not know the fucking category, do not come on the stage. And she was just kicking people off left and right. She was not playing around. There's this one thing that I don't even know how to describe to you that they had at the Pride. They had these like people who were on these like water jets who they were kind of just like Aquaman and Aquawoman. There was like several of them. And there were like, these hydro jets that had them like floating in the air and they were like off of water. It was like fucking, it was insane. The Dutch, they're just ahead of the times when it comes to parade festivals. There's also one float that I thought was kind of interesting and hilarious. Like, part of the themes of Pride there, there was like trans rights. It was very sort of activist. There was four different themes. One of them was like trans rights, Black Lives Matter. And they had a lot of Stonewall themes as well. So I thought it was really cool that, you know, it's Stonewall really was the epicenter for all of these events. So they had Stonewall floats and they had a people of color float, which I thought was interesting. Because it was like, oh, here's the people of color float. And I thought it was great because, like, celebrating people of color, but it was just kind of funny that there were people of color just all on one float. And there was also a lot of non-people of color on that float. But I digress. Not that, like, the whole people of color were just on one float. I'm not sure. Maybe something was lost in translation. They did also have, like, a Syrian float, which is also really great because you have a lot of, you know, Syrian refugees who have made their way to the Netherlands, and where in their own country it was illegal to be gay. So a lot of fun times we've had, and of course it would not be a trip to the Netherlands without me falling head over heels for someone. So we'll see where that goes. I'm currently in Barcelona. I came here for Circuit Festival. Also, I am also working. It's a workcation. So it's been interesting balancing work and play. And I've also made some discoveries about, you know, myself of, you know, you just got to let go in life. And we'll get more into that a little bit later. So this is me just leaving you a lot of ramblings of voicemails. And I hope it all makes sense. But we, Circuit Festival, which is this 10-day dance, gay, beach, not beach, because we were never really on the beach, but a 10-day dance, gay, music dance festival. It was insane. It was bananas. And me and my best friend Gavin, we got the full festival pass only to learn one. We didn't want to go to, you know, I think it's like 10 days and like 15 parties. And we had no interest in going to all those parties. Mind you, I'd just been in Amsterdam, you know, maybe 3-4 parties, that'd be fine. But we bought the festival pass because it's a festival. Wouldn't you buy a festival pass? No. Only first timers buy the festival pass because it's too much party. So we made that mistake. I managed to go to 8 out of 15 parties in 5 out of 10 of those days. And then I think Gavin did like 3 or 4 or something, or 5. I don't know. But it was amazing. And we, the main event is like on a Tuesday at a water park, like 30 minutes outside of town. And it's not, it's kind of a shitty water park, but it's just filled with, you know, gays and dancing and funness. I can't even explain it. I will say, if anybody is interested in going to Circuit Festival, do not buy the full festival pass. You don't need to. You don't need to. Just buy for the parties that you want to go to. And you'll get to enjoy the city as well. But it was great because there were some days when we would not go to the parties and we would go to the beach in Garaf, go to a fancy, a friend of mine has a connection to the Soho private club. So they have a Soho private beach over there. And, you know, recharge your batteries. But I think this is like my 6th or 7th time that I've been to Barcelona. And I think like my 8th or 9th time that I've gone to the Netherlands. And one thing that was really nice about the Circuit Festival is you just get people from all over the world. Actually, a lot of guys from like the Middle East and incredibly fucking hot. It's interesting because, you know, for some of them in the different regions of the Middle East that they're from, they don't have a lot of outlets to, you know, just be gay and be free and just dance and just be slutty and free and making out and doing all kinds of things. And you're also here, you know, I said to someone, so a lot of people maybe haven't been to San Francisco, and I always pitched it as like, oh my God, you've got to go to San Francisco. It's the gay Mecca. It's the gay Jerusalem. And then one of them was like, no, I'm pretty sure Barcelona is the gay Mecca. And I was like, oh yeah, it is. Like, this city has just been so free for a long time. I think you have a lot in Spanish culture of just not a lot of, just a lot of freedom in terms of, you know, sexuality and expression. And, you know, even in the, like, they were doing things up in the 60s. They had, you know, gay beaches. And so I can't say that anymore. I actually think that, you know, the home ground has moved. And that makes sense why you have something like Circuit Festival here in Barcelona, because it has a culture that is already just so free and just so whatever. And boy, do they get down, and boy, do they party. Boy, do they just go for it. So, and I also have a theory. I think that we could actually solve world peace if we just have every country have a gay representative, send them to the circuit, and they'll, you know, dance and fuck it out. Yeah. So that's how you're going to solve it. I also had I've also had a really amazing life-changing adventure here. I had a tarot card reading that was really informative. I'm not going to go into details about that right now, but it was very informative, both in my work and relationships. And my friend Anne does astrological charts, and she read my complete astrological chart. Like, took like an hour, 2 hours, you know, when they get like your... you know, not only that you were born, but where you were born and what time you were born. And it made a lot of sense. And I came to this realization that I feel like, you know, there's certain things that I thought like, oh, I need to change that about me, or that's like, why do I do that? And there's some things that are just in my cosmic DNA. And I come to this realization that you are who you are. I've also come to the realization that I really do want to move to the Netherlands. I've wanted to move to the Netherlands so many times, or I've had such a connection to it. And I thought that dreams were only things like career driven, because I feel like I've been so career driven and so focused on being an actor. But I have a dream to live in Europe, and I've had so many people who've approached me with different ways to make that happen, especially here in Barcelona. Also, that Spanish I was working on, I didn't use any of it. So I donated $400, $500 to Fluence and only got to like halfway to Spanish 3. I didn't use like any of my Spanish. So there's that. But I'm going to keep working on it. I will. But I have such a travel adventure bug in me, and you know, better do it now. Move to Europe now before I get so stuck in my ways. And you only live once, as the kids say. YOLO. Oh, also, Google Pixel, you have to get one. iPhone, she's dead. She's tired. I didn't realize how dead and tired she was. The Pixel. I've been able to use my phone like a human being. There's so many adventures and things that only could have happened if I was able to text so-and-so and map myself to a certain place. The Google Fi network is such a must if you're traveling outside the U.S. And the pictures are amazing. I've been converting these, you know, especially the Dutch. They love the iPhone, but I show them how good their pictures are going to turn out on the Google Pixel with that night sight. They have been converted. I will also say that I've had so many, especially in the Netherlands. I'd be at a party, a rooftop party, and you know, they always want to try to take the shit out of you that you're an American and just kind of take the piss out of you a little bit. But you know, when I travel, I always tell people I'm from California because I identify as more as a Californian than anything. And I just always throw back at them of like, well, at least my ancestors didn't enslave people and run the Dutch slave trade. And that shuts them up pretty well. I've been watching, as I've been working as well, in recovering, I've burned through so many things on Netflix. Glow, amazing, a wonderful, wonderful, amazing season of Glow. Dear White People, not as good as the last two seasons, especially the first season, but I do think it's interesting that they've been able to navigate of, you know, the conversations have evolved. It's been fascinating, the conversations that have evolved, because it was so heavily kind of on race. And I don't know, they just allowed the conversations of what these characters they're going through to grow, which has been fascinating. And still an undercurrent of race, because, you know, that does not go away. You're always involved in those conversations. And Glow was at its best this season. It never went where I thought it was going to go. Burn Through Dead to Me, also a really interesting show, lots of good twists and turns, and Good Place, I've been starting that. Really great diversity and really well written and twists and turns. So something that I am working on for you, and I want to talk to you when I talk to you about this, The Moors. So this is not a TV show at all. This is me switching gears completely. But The Moors are so, like, I've heard some stuff about The Moors. So I'm doing a deep dive, and we're going to talk about it in a few weeks. But one of my friends who's old Spanish money, Catalan, he was just sort of saying, like, there's a lot of, they don't really, the history of The Moors is kind of not hidden, but not really widely discussed here. And a lot of not only Spain, but European influence has been from The Moors. They've really helped Europe get out of the Dark Ages and get things like the three-course meal, fashion, hygiene, education, surgery, human flight. Yes, they had started to tinker around with it. Agriculture. So we're going to, in a few weeks, do a deep dive into The Moors because they do not get enough credit for so much that we're doing. There's also a book that I was going to tell you about, but I can't find the picture of it. One of my South African friends, we got into this really interesting sort of, he's one of those sort of likes to poke and prod things. Not like a devil's advocate guy, but kind of. But he showed me the example of this book that maybe, like, we're kind of doom and gloom about the state of the world, but the world might actually be in a better place than we think it is statistically. Like, running statistics that people's lives around the world are actually better off than that they were, you know, 50 or 60 years ago because of the advancements of technology. So it was really interesting. I'll find that book and send it to you. And let's see. Oh, I actually paying attention. At first, I was kind of paying attention my first week when I was over here to what was going on in the world and watching The View, watching The Daily Show, and I sense I've just completely taken a huge break, and it's been refreshing. Again, another reason that I want to take a break from the U.S. just for like a year or two. Is that terrible? Is that bad? Maybe I'll come over here and work on a one-man show, write a play, and just live a more simple life for a bit and relax and stretch my legs. I've learned that there's just more into life than just work, 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 da 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 da, work, 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 work. There's more than that. And I want to enjoy life. We work so much. We're so stressed over in the U.S. Take a breather, you know, let go. Life is, it's kind of like what RuPaul says. It's all just dress up. It's all just makeup. We're all just kind of playing into an idea of what we think that we have to play into. Like, we literally have built all of the stresses that we have, we've created them. Like, we're playing pretend, we're playing dress up. And maybe it's time to take a little step back and a little bit of a breather. But two things, and then I'm going to get out of this voicemail that is super long. I saw a little bit of a brief thing that I guess there was, like, the Proud Boys were having a rally in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. The Proud Boys are, you know, white nationalists. And then Antifa, who are usually kind of also white people too, but as The Root explained it, they're kind of like the X-Men, so they're the good guys. And so there was a protest and a rally that happened in Oregon. Long story long, apparently homeboy in the White House, I'm not going to call him the homeboy, that racist in chief in the White House is saying that he wants to label Antifa a terrorist organization. It's so whack diggity that he would label Antifa a terrorist organization and not like the KKK and those Tiki Torch guys. It's wild, hence me not wanting to come back. Also, Stranger Things and the Stranger Things Bible, apparently in season 3, Will was in the Bible, in the not the Bible, but the Stranger Things 3 guide, Will was going to be gay, and that he was going to be, you know, dresses weird, and that's kind of why he would get bullied, and that he was using, like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons as an escape. So I kind of hope that does still develop, and I kind of wish they had him, like, dressing in more, like, sort of colorful colors. I thought it would have been a more interesting thing. And there is one of the characters does say, it's not our fault that you don't like girls. So interesting. I look forward to seeing where that develops. Another thing, too, that was really kind of sad that I saw recently, that the two of the Pulse victims, survivors, two of the Pulse survivors apparently have joined a sort of ex-gay organization. One of them is HIV positive and had survived the Pulse shooting and has pretty much, like, it's so sad because I feel like the trauma of everything he went through, he probably feels like if he wasn't gay, this wouldn't have happened. And it just, you know, listen, if you're out there, Jesus loves you. If that is your jam, if you are gay, you are who you are. And it just kind of makes me sad because I've had a complete different experience on a spiritual journey. And my heart goes out to him and I to both of them. And I hope that they find their way. I hope that any of this makes sense. Also, people is the last one. And people are hashtag boycotting Mulan because of the actress in Mulan. She has been in support of the Hong Kong police because the whole entire thing of essentially China and Hong Kong, what's happening is that potentially Hong Kong will be underneath China rule. So there's a lot of sort of protests and things that are happening. And because she's been in support of the way the police have been treating the Chinese, the Hong Kong protesters, people are like, she's an American. She's been a naturalized American citizen. And so she's weighing in on it. But some people are assuming that maybe she's feeling pressure from what her family might experience. I don't know. I clearly, like I said, have been just doing peripheral kind of peekaboos into what's happening. But this has been kind of a subject that what's happening between China and Hong Kong has definitely been a subject that they've been talking about over here. And Brexit. A lot of my British friends are like, we have no idea what the fuck is going to happen. So that's my spiel, and I look forward to talking to you very soon, and I love you. You're fierce, you're amazing. All right.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too.
Butts, 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 butts.
No. But you change your mind.
We did it.
We did something.
Well, girl, I have so much to say about what you said.
And me about you.
Okay, Corner Kids, join us next week for part two of Minority Corner's voicemail conversations.
Don't forget to tweet at us at Minority Corner. And remember, Corner spelled with a K.
And you can also send us an email at minoritycorner@gmail.com. It's been a while, so drop us a line from wherever you are around the world. Ask us anything, anything.
We've also got our Facebook group and community going strong. The Corner Kids Playground, so check that out.
And thank you all for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together,
we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.